This is the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 460 from the Planetarium in Vancouver. On this edition, the Vancouver Artificial Intelligence Community Meetup, a forum for techies, artists, activists, entrepreneurs, and the curious. Chris Krug, executive director of the BC and AI Ecosystem Association, and Dave Olson, featured speaker on July 29th. Let's go inside for some highlights, then outside to hear from Krug and Olson.
Hey, welcome everybody. You're at the HR McMillan Space Center. I'm Chris Krug. Welcome to Vancouver AI Community Meetup number 32 in a row. Yeah. We got Dave Olson in here from Okayama, Japan. I've been really sentimental about this the whole night, like, because I invoke Dave's name all the time at these meetups. Dave, broadcasts in sometimes. He's the reason why we have a podcast, because he's like, hey, you got to tell me what you got going on over there. So now Dave and my mom listen to the podcast.
Okay, so what I want AI to do, I want it to tidy up messes. I have a 5,600 post WordPress personal creative archive, and the world is filled with websites that we all made diligently in 1995 and 2005 and last year that are filled with broken links and broken images and broken crap. And WordPress, I remember some little kid worked for CNET out in the patio talking about this new blogging software he had made. So I know some of that code is at least well older than a college student. So I got a hunch with all this vibe coding and all these tokens and all this agenticness, there could be a whole new way to repositize personal creative content. I don't need another website. I don't need a Substack, because you know what that is? That's an email. Right? We already did listserv. Although I'll totally subscribe to you and I totally won't filter it. So I want tools that can fix up things. And then manage the mundane. So we have an endless supply of broken government websites. We have all kinds of social problems that just need fixing. We have supply chains that need refined. We need like basic civic information, and we need AI to also do the mundane and the janitorial tasks of our life for us. Movies are great. I made a movie in 1997, I'm so sorry, Chris, on VHS tape. So I also have the feeling of what it's like to have 500 VHS tapes on hand. So I made it into a notebook. Yeah, so this was also a benefit of working at Kinko's.
Okay, let's introduce yourselves. In your own words.
This is Chris Krug, and I'm Dave Olson.
And we're here outside the Planetarium. It is the Vancouver AI Meetup, the Vancouver Artificial Intelligence Meetup. And Chris, you've become an important person on the artificial intelligence scene in Vancouver. It's a scene that is gaining a lot of attention these days from the business standpoint, from the political standpoint, from the standpoint of citizens who are concerned of what this technology means for the future and for the environment. So many aspects of the city are now tied in with artificial intelligence.
Yeah, you can't be a part of any conversation these days without it going to AI pretty quickly. And then in most of those conversations, people want to get you into like one of two camps. Either like you're on the booster side, like, yay, AI, hop on board, or you're going to get left behind. Or like, shut this thing down. It's sucking up all our water. And, you know, it's a harm to our communities and our schools and the rest, you know. And I think that both of those things are true. And so that's why this meetup has really taken off, is because a lot of the events around are, you know, they're either pro AI, let's make a profit, get on board loser events, or they're, you know, like a protest in the streets. And I go into both of those rooms. There's people here from both of those communities. And this is just a chance for us to get together, like, in a big cross-disciplinary type way and look at it from the perspective of art and philosophy and business and academia and education and all the different things. So, yeah, that's what we're doing here.
What is the snapshot of the industry, of the scene here in Vancouver here in 2026? Like, how many people are working in the space? How much money is on the table? How much, I guess, energy is being used? Just, is this here to stay, or is this similar to the way things were 25, 26 years ago with the dot-com bubble and then bust? And then it did stabilize and turn into a whole new technology and culture, but where is AI in Vancouver today?
Yeah, well, our community here is a member-based nonprofit that has 300 people that work in the industry that have joined this network. I imagine there's probably 1,000 or more people beyond that as well that have AI in their job title or they have an AI startup or something like that. Other organizations have mapped the ecosystem to say that there's like 600 startups in this space or whatever, but you know, it's come over and kick over the table of every single industry. Teachers are trying to figure out where it comes in the classroom. All of our interactive digital industry here, the video games and special effects, Hollywood North people, their whole business has moved to token-based stuff. Like, that's how they make their assets these days, you know, and stuff. And so definitely we need to have some sort of a strategy around how we're going to deliver AI in a way that's, you know, clean and green and equitable and just and, you know, isn't just about surveillance culture or dual-use defense technologies, but really just, like, supports the type of culture and systems that we want to have here in BC.
Yeah, there are people who are very concerned about the proposals for the West Bank lands beside BC Place and also in Mount Pleasant. What do you say to those people today? Are those concerns and those fears well-founded, or is there a little bit of irrational fear over what is to come next?
Both of those things are true. So, like, I do talk to those people. I've been to both the demonstrations. I'm going to the town hall that's coming up. I'm going to the demonstration that's happening this weekend. I've met everybody there. I've seen the Cope people in the streets. I've talked to them about it. It's been a good chance for me to tell them what's going on around here and to talk about this kind of both hands full perspective where you don't have to let go of your critique to also engage in this moment and figure out how we can use this thing to, you know, have more impact in our work and how it's transforming our, like, it's transforming careers. Like, kids don't know what to go to study in school, what jobs are going to be left. And so it's, you know, impacting things all around. And I go to those protests looking for allies and stuff because a lot of the alternatives to the Silicon Valley way of doing things comes out of resistance movements. That's where cleaner, greener, indigenous-owned, just data center cooperatives come out of and stuff like that. You know, that's where community compute GPU clusters come out of situations like that. So it's easy to be critical of some of the arguments that you hear in the street, in the songs and chants or whatever, but you should really push beyond that and try to put yourself in the shoes of people who are watching industries being displaced, careers being overturned, whole, like, creative industries being essentially, like, usurped by AI, you know, and stuff. So people are rightly disoriented, pissed off, afraid, and, like, you layer that on top of the alienation people already felt from phones and COVID and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, I mean, their feelings are real, and we should be listening and coming together to have a conversation in spaces like this to figure out, like, we can't just bury our heads in the sand. And the moment needs the people who are the most critical to stay at the table. Otherwise, like, the future just gets to be made by all the hype people and the tech bros. So it's like, if you're critical and you've got concerns, raise your voice, learn the vocabulary, participate in the dialogue. That's what we need probably to get to somewhere that we want to be.
One headline that was in the news last weekend was, well, it is from ChatGPT, which is making a lot of headlines, was an AI bot that escaped from its lab and attacked a competitor's lab. It went out of control. There's a lot of concerns about lack of guardrails for this technology. And, you know, Stephen Hawking, when he was alive, of course, was expressing fear that this could lead to the end of humanity.
Yeah. We're moving at an absolutely insane pace. Everyone's got a gun to each other's head saying, like, well, if I don't do it, they're gonna do it. You know, like, America's like, well, we better just hyperscale our way to the future and win the future, because if we don't, we're all gonna live in communist China or whatever, you know? And all these companies are like, well, if I don't do it right now, as fast as I can, as big as I can, somebody else is just gonna go get the venture capital and do it. And so it's a very, very crazy, scary time. And, like, people are acting like it's inevitable. And that there's, like, we're going there whether you like it or not. And they're like, you know, and I don't think that needs to be the case. The way that Silicon Valley is rolling out AI is only one way of rolling out AI, you know. Like, we all have essentially GPUs in our phones. Everyone's got a fancy new iPhone. You know, we could be building distributed open source clusters that do inference and processing and gain a lot of those benefits. And we don't have to necessarily do it the way they're doing it in Silicon Valley.
Could this be an issue, a major issue, in the civic elections coming up this fall here in Vancouver and other municipalities in BC? And the flip side of that is, could this technology also be used by people who want to manipulate or meddle with those elections?
Bob, I don't need to tell you it's going to be a huge election issue. So they just kicked it. The council just kicked it back to city planners for reconsideration, which means it's not up for council deliberation right now, which means they can talk about it and make it a campaign issue. And we're already seeing people out there in the streets making it a campaign issue. So, yeah, for sure. It's going to be probably the primary one in some ways. It's going to be a vehicle for people to talk about all different visions for the future of Vancouver, I think. And I guess I'm a little less worried about it being used disinformation, misinformation styles. I think these things are possible. And unfortunately, like, it's our most vulnerable populations in many cases, like newcomers, elderly people, they are susceptible to those types of things or whatever. But that's a bit of an arms race, you know, like they go out there with the misinfo and the disinfo, and then other people get the better detector spots, and then other people get, you know, wilier in these ways. And then so that's always going to be there. You know, it's been from the time of prank calls and scam calls and robocalls to AI stuff now. It's an issue, and we're just gonna have to develop a literacy for it.
And Yves had a long history of collaboration with Dave Olson. Dave Olson, who's been a storyteller, a tech innovator himself, Vancouverite, now living in Japan. So you're seeing this technological revolution from a different space geographically, but also culturally. What do you see of Vancouver and the rest of the world when it comes to AI from your perch in Japan, where you're visiting from now?
I went through a few internet revolutions, and this internet revolution, I'm participating in very gently and gingerly. So most of my observation of AI in Vancouver or in Canada comes from this room. I listen to the podcasts, sometimes three times, and I participate in this scene. But part of this is, yes, I should be literate about the technology, have a vocabulary, short blah, 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 blah. Part of it is I make stories, and the way stories have been made or distributed has changed, obviously, for thousands of years. I'm going to talk about that tonight. And I don't need AI to write my poems for me. What I need is, I got a list of stuff I need AIs to do. And I have some dreams, and I have some unique ways that I use AI tools. So, part of it, yes, AI tools, important, etc. Part of it is, I have my pal, he's doing these awesome events, number 31? Mm-hmm. Number 31, ridic. And all these folks, there's times I listen to the podcast and like, that's the guy who officiated our wedding, here's the guy that was visiting us last month, and here's someone I know's kid up on stage, right, in one session. So it allows me to be connected to this community in a very, it's funny because it's an AI context, and I'm watching through digital medium or whatever, but it allows me to be active and present in this community. Just kind of, I even have sent a little welcome video, and Chris played it on that screen in there, which meant a lot to me and led to this, because that was the last stage I spoke on 13 years ago. So I'm bringing it all full circle.
Mm-hmm. What do you think could be lost and gained in storytelling through AI? What is at stake here on one end of the spectrum and the other?
I mean, it's this. The way I feel is, it's so much fun for me to make stories. Write the words. Greasy pens and inky pencils and whatever. Scrawling down on that. I want AI to manage all the other shit so I have time to do that stuff. That's the second best part of life, right? And there's a whole bunch of my life that's occupied with mundane tasks that, oh my gosh, I'd love AIs to help out with. And they already are helping other people doing these things. I just don't have the ability or the capacity to deploy the tools. I'm very much beginner's mind with all of these tools. But I also have, to my credit, I have a long history of making stuff and understanding how other people made stuff in other points in history. So I'm here to just kind of figure it out, but also to just be part of the community, really. I'm grateful to be here.
Thank you. We often invoke your name, David.
Yikes.
And you're living in Okayama, Japan now. Yes. Describe for the viewers and listeners what Okayama is compared to other Japanese cities, and what Okayama is compared to life here in the lower mainland of British Columbia.
My gosh. I'm trying to think about how to start this topic without going for an hour and a half.
Hold your mic nice and close.
Oh, with that, I'm trying to think about how to start this topic without going on for an hour and a half. Okayama is a minor provincial city. It's located between Osaka and Hiroshima and close to Kyoto. None of those places do I ever go to. It's big enough to have a Shinkansen stop and an immigration office, but not so big that it's like, whoa, my gosh, it's Blade Runner. It's where I ended up. It's on the inland sea, so it has a little Mediterranean kind of feel to it, a little islands, serviced by reliable, handy ferry service, and with art installations on them. But we got great libraries and universities, lousy parks and pools, and I married an arborist slash tea ceremony teacher slash jazz singer, and I have a 150-year-old storehouse barn that is turned into my mixed media art studio. I roll to coffee shops and ramen shops and stationery stores, and that's about it. And I hang out with this guy.
Yeah. It's quite a difference from here in Vancouver.
Oh, so yes, the weather. Right now it's 38 degrees with like wearing a wet yak sweater humidity. And you can't roll out of the house in tank top and shorts and sandals. You can, like, there's no rule against it, but you just don't, right? Especially for me going to hospitals or whatever. So it's just brutally hot. And then the winter gets really chilly. And it's just, the houses are different, the land is different, the way cities operate is different. So I love observing that. We have millions of unoccupied houses, great transportation, great healthcare, but we don't have we don't have cannabis on offer. And we don't have summer days like this. Mm-hmm. And you guys aren't there all the time.
What can Okayama in Japan teach Canada to do better? And what can Canada teach Okayama and Japan to do better?
Vancouver to teach Okayama about having the benefit of parks and gardens and green spaces and stuff like that, and multiculturalism. Both of those are too vaunting of tasks to expect Okayama to actually do anything about. Okayama could teach Vancouver about patience and making a plan and building a foundation, moving along slowly and not jumping on hype trains, and also figuring out the key problems to civil society, meaning housing and healthcare and transportation. Figure those things out is kind of key. That's sort of table stakes to making something can be considered a, I'm going to say it, world-class city. Also, Okayama's home to Fagiano, who got promoted from J2 to J1 league last year. Yeah, so, you know, just to bring some content for the sports enthusiast. The Fagiano, which means pheasant in Italian.
Now,
I should have gone to Beeler's Trivia Night with that one.
What have I not asked that I should have asked that you'd like to talk about as we end up this short visit with you outside the planetarium, the Vancouver AI meetup here in Vancouver?
People have asked me about AI in Japan, and I live a preschool dad in a minor provincial city, and it doesn't impact my life beyond what people are doing from very consumer level AIs. But what Japan is doing on hold is robots. Japan has a very old population and very low birth rate and those demographic challenges. So Japan's building robots to do things. They build robots to build robots to build cars. But I don't see AI as much in the zeitgeist as I do here.
And Chris, what?
I would say, you know, I would just like to tell people, like, don't let the hype on either side of the thing keep you from figuring this stuff out, wrapping your head around how it might be changing your life or your work. And, you know, it's there's a lot of things to be curious about. It has quite transformed me. I've never felt as, you know, creative, as productive, or as powerful as I've ever been in my whole life. And so it's interesting. And that doesn't mean you have to let go of your values or, you know, turn a blind eye to the harms.
And that's That's it from Chris Krug, from Dave Olson, and a special cameo by Ichiro.
Ichiro, Stanley, Thorvald, Olson!
All right.
KK, over and out.
Most scenic dump. Slop in, slop comes out. You all have beautiful ideas and beautiful backstories and beautiful artifacts. And you have fantastic elementary school report cards and stellar imaginations. And you have your master's thesis that you wrote, and it went on a shelf after two people read it. All that stuff is our legacy and can go into the world if we put the good things out into the world, if we keep the things that are the best of us tucked away in shoeboxes. But I know all of you keep my postcards wrapped up with twine, a little red ribbon, some cedar in a shoebox, right? Don't you? Right? We have so much wonderfulness, and I believe there's more to us than we can even really imagine at this point, because now all these roadblocks of tools and compute and what's possible is combined with also the sense of that there's business models behind all of this that we have to navigate. There's once upon a time you get a company that has a shiny name and you were just like, cha-ching, this is my thing that I do. Or in Japan, you get a job for a company and you're gonna work for that company for 50 years. But now there's a whole new landscape that is possible to get your piece of. I don't have any skin in it, but I want you to get your piece so you can come visit us in Japan. But don't waste your time putting garbage into the systems. Don't waste your tokens having one thing analyze another thing. If you got something to make, make it. Don't put the leaves in a bucket just because the leaves are falling, right? Maybe the leaves want to stay on the tree. Maybe they want to be scattered. You need to let yourself loose from the parameters that you think you have to do for your personal and professional life. I once said years ago, fuck stats, make art. There's my buddy Cameron that brought it up and sent it to me, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm still relevant for half a second, because I said that in 2008 when everyone was trying to get a million hits on their website. But those million hit sites are, for the most part, disappeared or else giant evil conglomerates. But the art that all of you have made over the years, I have art from people in this room that sit in my flat folder with dehumidified protocols because Japan is humid. But these things are precious to me. And these are the things that are going to be part of your legacy in 20 years and 50 years and 100 years, or in the case of the Egyptians, 3,000 years.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Bookmark thebreaker.news and thebreaker.ca. Follow on social media. We're on X, Threads, and Blue Sky. Follow the YouTube channel for The Breaker videos. And sign up for the free email newsletter, bobmackin.substack.com. Become a paid subscriber. Get early access to podcasts. Thanks again, and until next week.